We're back in party chat.
We back again. It's the new year.
Yes. Party chat, technically. I guess we'll just roll it with season two as well. We've got some visual changes if you're watching the video podcast that we'll see on screen. Wait, BBK? BBK?
Yeah.
For those who are listening at home and not watching our camera feed, BBK is making very aggressive gestures over the camera at me right now.
Oh, yeah. People didn't even know that we video conference, right?
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
You got to watch the video feed to see that. And he keeps acting like he's going to swing at me or something. BBK, calm yourself.
Uh-oh. Oh, gosh.
It's a new show. It's a new season of the show, but we're not that kind of show.
We don't actually use a video feed, everybody. But that would be kind of fun. That would be really nice. It changes the dynamic dramatically. Yeah. But this is what? Episode 6,
yes.
Right? Okay.
This is the expansion of the DualCom podcast here on a podcast radio. And we respond to your comments, talk about stuff. We got a stacked show. I don't know if we're going to get through it all today. I love it when I stack it so much that I'm just like, this could be three shows if we really took our time.
Yeah, this is pretty amazing. You all leave fantastic comments and ideas for topics on the dual commentary and on this podcast.
Yes.
And then just also on our channels. And so we built an entire show to address that because, like Ivo said, every one of these episodes, we've run out of time before we've been able to just get through the previous week's show. So I say, enough waffling. Let's just hop right in.
Okay. So I wanted to give a shout out to those of you who, speaking of comments, sounded off last time with your favorite gaming YouTubers that cover like actually good, fun, and often niche games. There are a lot of good recommendations in the comment section of the last Party Chat podcast. I'm still crawling through them. And so I just wanted to give a thanks to you all. There was also someone who commented that we got a comment from the Gunman, and someone commented and was just like, whoa, I watch them all the time. That's we're full circle here.
That's so cool. Yeah. It amazingly, like we just talked about Chiral Drifter in the last video. There were tons of people who were like, dude, Chiral,
yeah.
Let's go. It's just like, well, maybe that community sense is a little more alive on YouTube than we give it credit for.
Yeah. And we had a couple comments about that made me want to pose more questions to the audience here. The first one here is from Radagast the White, who is specifically asking if we can you guys help us fight the algorithm by recommending specific people and videos to watch and linking them in the description? We're all fighting the manipulative algorithm and the utterly disgusting corporation that runs this platform. We're here for the people, the community, the art. Also, we are not consumers, we are people. That term is deliberately dehumanizing and used by corporations that basically they want to know if we can recommend channels in the description and comments. And then we had also had another one from the Backvlog 5106, who said that I will say that a great way to find small anti-algorithm content is honestly just to explore the channels of the people commenting here. You two have built a community around patience and intentionality and inspired a lot of us to start our channels. Ironically enough, Chiral Drifter and I met in the comments section. So I'm wondering, I have wanted for a while, either in this show, the DualCom, we can leave it to the commenters to decide which one it might be more appropriate in, that I had been thinking for a while we should have a small section where we try to have one or two small games that we shout out each show. I'm wondering if we should pair that with just like a single piece of, I hate using the word, but like a single video or two that we have watched in the past month or something that we would recommend.
Yeah, I love it. That's fantastic. It reminds me, honestly, of Machinima Respawn.
Yeah.
I get a chance to talk about that again. If any of you watched old Machinima Respawn with Sark and
Butch
and CNNers and then APL Fisher, like, that show was primarily them talking about creators in Machinima Network and some of their favorite videos that they had seen that week. And so, yeah, I'm fully down. I feel like we have done an okay-ish job on some of the dual comms, but not consistently doing it. So that might be a great recurring segment.
Because like last episode, we shouted out Chiral Drifter's video, but like that's not a recurring thing. So I think it would be interesting to have a recurring segment. We will have to stay on top of that. Please give me just a moment while I sneeze. Oh, it's not coming. Oh, no.
Worst feeling.
That's the worst.
In the world. Yeah, it's horrible. And like after I get sick, I typically have that feeling like all day long for days. And it's just like a knife in your nose and your forehead. And you're like, no. But I would also encourage the commenters to share and shout out the people that they enjoy watching and share those videos, because you're part of the experience in this Discovery Network too.
Yeah, if nothing else, like that would be a good source for us to pull from and highlight. And I don't I loved the mailbox, but I don't necessarily want it to be, I'd want it to be a shorter section. I wouldn't want to dedicate the whole show to just like reacting to videos and stuff because I have a lot of feelings about that kind of a content. But
I fully agree.
Highlighting, especially the smaller stuff, we've done a decent job of that. And I think making a dedicated section of like, here's our favorite game this week, here's our favorite video, moving on, I think that would be pretty cool.
That's awesome.
I also wanted to, just as burying the lead a little bit here, as a little bit of housekeeping, we are officially launching Patreon. Now, before whatever thoughts you are forming in your head about it, I wanted to lay out some groundwork about how this is going to work. And that we're specifically announcing it in this show because this is the community reaction show. Like, those of you watching this have to be really tuned in to really care what's going on here. So it is patreon.com/dualcom. That will be the URL. I've already been setting it up. It will have our two existing shows synced up as a dedicated, like, singular feed that you could follow if you wanted for both of those shows. And then we will be doing effectively batches of exclusive content.
Yes. Sorry. Wait, hold on. I'm going to interrupt this story, by the way, with another story of just my huge long brain fart moments. I hope you don't edit that out. Okay. Literally yesterday I was on the phone for an account thingy.
Yeah.
And the person asked for the address, and I literally just gave the area code, and we sat in silence for probably 45 seconds. And the person was like, no, what's the full address? And I didn't even realize that I didn't share it or say it. And I've had like multiple moments the last 2 weeks where I'm like, wait, what am I missing? Like, am I just like not in the zone right now or something? So yes, to expand on this. Yeah, we've been doing short sections, like 20, 30 minute one-off topics that don't necessarily fit on like YouTube or whatever, and trying to record that and build something to where like we're not into eternal subscriptions. We've talked about that before.
Yes.
And the idea is, if you like the show, you want to support us, you do the thing, you hop on board, consume the content. And if you like it, you want to support longer term, great, that's awesome. But we also wanted it to be something where like we already have what, 4 or 5 videos ready, yes, or something like that on there. So the idea is hop on board, enjoy some benefits, but there's zero expectation for this to be like a forever thing.
Yeah.
You know, we just wanted another outlet to sort of follow what we've been talking about, to try and push content out on a different platform and have a little less reliance on YouTube and maybe support some of those community features on platforms that are a little more oriented towards it.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal. I think with that, that would be a wonderful place to continue having discussions, especially if you want any discussions that aren't necessarily a full, you know, party chat response kind of thing. On a technical level, like BBK said, with regard, like we want to have a separate place where you can watch that isn't there's some recommendation algorithm in Patreon, but you know, isn't algorithmically driven. My goal is to provide basically all of the options that you could want in terms of how you can consume what we provide. We will have unlisted YouTube videos with a video edit for the topics. I will provide a video download so you could watch it locally or put it on your Jellyfin server or phone or whatever, as well as an MP3 of the podcast as an audio file. I think Patreon will let us make like our own feed out of it, so you'll be able to follow it that way. And my expectation here is, because like we said, we're kind of going to do batches of content instead of just promising like extended versions of the podcast or whatever, because that's always so lame. Like, I don't want to watch a video, find out there's an X amount of chunk missing from the video that is on this other platform, go pay for it, and then have to rewatch the whole thing to find the extra stuff.
Yeah.
So they're going to be they're smaller, but still pretty deep.
it's like getting kicked out of the club. It's like, all right, VIPs only, everybody out. I'm like, we're just having fun. The food was coming. Yay. You know?
Yeah. So we'll have some smaller, but still kind of deep discussions that are on their own. And we're going to have them uploaded in batches. I'm going to make our introduction video that's just talking about the podcast public so that anyone checking it out obviously can see what's going on. And then anytime we make a new kind of batch of the exclusive stuff, I will make a public free post on there as well announcing that. So you can actually follow the Patreon for free without paying. And then we are totally fine if you want to subscribe for a month, watch that stuff, unsubscribe. Like we said, we don't want you to subscribe for 10 years and forget about it and lose all your money or whatever. Like, if you just want to watch or, you know, subscribe long enough to watch, we are fine. And we are going to enable that in some ways that I think is really important.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. So, all righty, sir. We got a lot of comments. We got roll.
What should we start with?
Intrinsic motivation for gaming.
All right.
What is this here, sir?
Yeah, this is from Pocket of Larry over on the forums. Demodisc.zone is the domain for those. And they said, I've noticed a lot of gaming discourse revolves around extrinsic motivation, which is motivation from the outside. Rolling credits, achievements and trophies, ranking up and the like. Not pointing any fingers, I'm guilty of this as well. Then I think back to when I was a kid and how I didn't care about this stuff as much. I just played and made my own fun. And has been made evident by people talking about their own childhood gaming experiences or talking about how their kids play games. It's not a unique experience. I'm not exactly sure when extrinsic motivation started becoming more important to me, but I want to try and get some of that intrinsic internal motivation back. I don't think you can really talk about this topic without touching on the session game. And one of those has been a revitalizing source of this for me, that being Mario Kart World. Initially, I was just screwing around in free roam. Very little of it is required for completion. So after a certain point early on, it exists just for the fun of it. They didn't even originally intend for the player to know when they had done all the missions and got all the collectibles anyway. Then I started doing versus mode as a way to play the Grand Prix with the traditional three-lap structure for a bit of extra fun, just noting down how I did in a notebook. And it made me realize how great versus mode is in this game in particular, with all the different routes and things like that available. I feel like I might occasionally just set up versus mode, set the tracks to random, and see where it takes me.
That's great. Pocket already found that all they needed to do was the self-discovery element there, right? They landed on that.
Yes, That is the biggest thing, I think, with finding that thing is finding a game that you either know or you just got to fire up a bunch till you get there, that when you launch the game, it's not asking anything of you. It's asking what you want to do, because there's so many games and, you know, we don't need to harp on it. But like, especially in the multiplayer space where it's like, all right, as soon as you open it, it's like, do you want to buy one of these five things? Do you want to do the battle pass? Do you want to go for these challenges? Do you want to do this lobby or that lobby? And that, if it's posing specific options to you in your face, then it's trying to sway what you do. Whereas if it's just like, here's our modes, what you feel like, bud, then you're going to be in a really good path for that kind of self-discovery. And for me, it's funny. I was all about last month, all December, especially with the holiday, I was all about the session game. And I was convinced that was all I had time for. The past, oh, wow, it's already January 21st.
Yeah, the month's almost done.
Okay, well, for the most of January so far, I've actually been spending my nightly Steam Deck sessions playing the Digimon game, Time Stranger.
Oh, yeah.
And that's story right. game.
And you're getting pretty far in that.
Yeah, it's a full-on kind of JRPG. And it's an RPG, at least. And I don't feel pressured to complete it. I'm often logging in and just grinding battles so I can see what Digivolution paths I can navigate with my mons and figure out where they can go and whatever. Like, I'm still kind of playing it like a session game. But I got there because I was spending so much time in games like Jotun Slayer, Ball Pit, Warrior's Abyss. There was one other I was playing. And, like, those were fun, and I was addicted to the loop. And then I wanted to see what my objectives were in Digimon. I just wanted to see what it had to offer for me that I might be able to do soon. And it's not an open world game, but it's open enough in terms of like what you want to do at any moment. Because, and this is not unusual, but like, you know, it's got its main, you got your main quest, you got your side quest, and then you just got the exploration and discovery. And I was having so much fun. I was avoiding the game because I didn't think I had time to sit there and like do an hour, hour at a time to complete the story game.
Yep.
And then I was just having so much fun, like going through my party and trying out different combinations and battles with the different mons and their types and trying to figure that out. Just exploring the world. It's got the digital world's always very cute with like cassette tapes and CRTs lying around and giant capacitors the size of mountains and like goofy things like that. And I wound up I am like 17 hours into this game, and I don't know that I'm even remotely 17 hours of progression into the game by any stretch, but I'm having a lot of fun just exploring.
Well, and real quick, the gameplay you sent for Digimon Time Stranger, Time Story, what was it called?
Time Stranger.
It's Time Stranger. It looks like the inside of your computer.
Yeah.
Like, I was laughing because, like, the aesthetic of the actual game design, I'm like, that's like Epos's studio. Yes. If you could literally go inside a computer inside Epos's studio, that's what the RGB would look like.
Yes, it is. It is crazy.
But you just said, like, the realization that I've had as well in the last month, basically any game can be a session game if you treat it as such and if you give it smaller time windows. So Skyrim, maybe 15, 20 minutes a day, there's more than enough time there to just like walk through the world, find a new quest, go and do a mine, loot the boss.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly satisfying because now I'm on like 2 months of 20, 30 minute sessions of Skyrim, not every day, and having a ton of fun. And yeah, there are times I'm at the end of like a big point in the main quest that's got like a little lengthy cutscene, and by lengthy it's probably 3 minutes long, but that I'm like, okay, I'm going to put this off until I know that I have a little bit more time, and I'm just wandering around the world. And it's so amazing because most games, I'm going to say, you can play as session games with the exclusion of an investment multiplayer game, like a MMO raiding. You need to be able to set aside the time to do that with your group. You know how long most of those activities can take, and so you can't just hop in for 15 minutes and bounce. But a lot of single player stuff, even Horizon, right? Very story based game. You and your wife can play that absolutely like a session game. You could put in a 30 minute session. And if people don't know what we mean by that, we've kind of been using the term session game for like a year and a half here. It refers to like arcade game as a maybe an older connotative reference. Just a game that you can pick up and play forever. And you're not that concerned about beating it or the end. It's like not the same as a Last of Us or a super narrative heavy driven game, but you could even play something like The Last of Us as a session game. You know, my mind jumps immediately to the PlayStation 2 era, like the Tony Hawk Pro Skaters or the SSX or the ATV Off-Road Fury. Those are games I can play the rest of my life for 20, 30 minutes and be happy. I don't care if I hit credits on those types of games, but it's been a huge realization recognizing that basically any game you can play as a session game if you just sort of change your structure and mindset about it.
Yeah. Anything that can really move at the pace that you move at. It's funny. We absolutely played Horizon Zero Dawn that way. I think we are struggling to play Forbidden West in the same way. I don't know what exactly it is about it. Maybe it's the pacing of getting started with a game, but like so far it has been so story heavy, even as we've reached the open world part. We've reached a lot of that stuff, but like it still feels like we're so on rails that like, even last night, we've had a pretty rough weekend with the kiddo because it was like a 4-day weekend. And so bedtimes were not super tight. So like we've only had 30 minutes at most really at night before bedtime to do something. And so we've just been watching a show instead. And then last night we had mostly our normal amount of time, although it was a little interrupted. And like we had started the game and did a couple dialogue scenes, but then it was like, maybe we should just give up for the night and go back to a show because it felt like we were just going to be so still on rails that we wouldn't want to shoehorn it into the amount of time that we had. So it's interesting to see how games change. You know, something, I think I've talked about this on the show before. You know, a game that I feel like I would be great to go back to?
Which one?
Final Fantasy 13.
Yeah.
I heavily criticized that game. And it was my first real attempt at playing a Final Fantasy game. And I realized that's a giant sin. But like my ex that I was with at the time was like obsessed with it. And the cinematic rendering on the PS3 was just so beautiful. And I was like hooked. I was like, I've heard of Final Fantasy my whole life. I've only ever poked at it. I'm going to try it. And I was so critical of the linear, like you literally walk in a straight line for most of the game. Like even on the map, it is literally just a straight line.
You can just hold A. You can just hold A literally for every battle until a point.
Yes, until the point. And then at that point, I was just like, well, I can't do this now. So I was very hypocritical with it, but I was very critical of that. And then I've noticed with Digimon, when you were in some of the on-rail story parts, it has even the same kind of map as Final Fantasy 13 does, where you can see that it's clearly just a line with a couple little pockets to pick up an item or whatever. And I'm like, I don't hate this anymore. For the time that I have, it makes it so much easier if I need to pop in for like 15 minutes and then put my Steam Deck to sleep. I still know what's going on because I just keep walking forward. And I'm like, okay. I think it's time for me to return to it. I really wish they would do like a collection on, I'm going to say on PS5, but I mean just like a modernized update because the PC ports were garbage. So like I would love to see them just kind of put out a nice little collection of those three games again that were given some quality of life love because I feel like I would really enjoy returning to them.
Yeah, we could talk for 20 minutes, so I'll just be super quick on 2 points here.
This is a podcast.
13 is savagely beautiful. That game was so ahead of its time. I think it, in you know, certain areas and sequences, looks just as nice as Remake and Rebirth in some of the cutscenes. And that's incredible for a game that launched on PS3 and 360. 13-2.
Early, too.
Very early, yeah. 13-2 is much better. They expanded on basically most of the criticisms. And so from a combat perspective, the 13-2 system is really rad. And that paradigm shift system, they actually brought in 10-2, and they refined on it. And so it is cool. I never played the third one, Lightning's
It seemed
return,
like 13
revenge,
was
whatever.
Moving closer to the more, like, almost real-time-ish combat that, like, 15 had. I didn't play it, but...
Yeah, they still had ATB, but they, it's just been a weird struggle for them to figure out how they make turn-based more appealing. And then we have now the paradigm of Expedition 33.
Yeah.
And so the Expedition 33 copycats are coming. And the other thing I was going to say is Forbidden West is a big game.
Yeah.
It is a very big game. And so what I would say is just give it some time. And I don't want to talk anything further for spoiler purposes, but it is a very, very big, big game.
Yeah.
So why don't we jump to our next one here? Is this a new PSP game that's coming in the mail?
You know, we talk a lot on these shows about intentional game pickups and whatever, and I am the shining example of the opposite of that. But I have been on a quest to collect as many Diablo Lights as I can on any platform because I enjoy them so much. And by Diablo Light, I mean isometric-ish action RPG with your hot bar, but not necessarily, like, I could never get into Path of Exile because it was just so hardcore with the skill trees and everything. Like, it was just too much for me. And so I'm thinking the Snowblind games, like Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance, Champions of Norrath, and Lord of the Rings War in the North, which I've been playing recently and is freaking incredible.
I've heard that game's great.
And I don't remember, honestly, if I saw the comment and then bought it or if I happened to buy it right as I saw the comment. But Level 5 Metapod 5666, which is just a lovely name. Shouts out to Metapod, putting in the work. Gave a shout out to Untold Legends Brotherhood of the Blade for PSP. That is a great game I played back in the day, which is a more casual, fun ARPG, which is right up my alley. So I picked it up fully in box. I cannot wait to play it. I will probably capture some gameplay. Probably not a ton, but some gameplay for this episode.
Well, I was really hoping to play and capture this game to show you. Except, that ain't the game. That is Samurai Champloo Volume 2. I put it in my PSP and was really confused why it kept showing up as video and not the game. They didn't put the game UMD in here. It was listed as complete in box, tested, working, confirmed. So I contacted the seller. Either they still have the game and they just put the wrong thing in the case, or I'm getting a refund and they're getting a very bad seller review. I bet you know which one I hope it comes out to.
I also wanted to give a shout out. Did you know there was a Fallout Brotherhood of Steel game exclusively for the PS2?
No, I had no idea.
Now, this game is a Diablo-lite. Those of you listening at home, like myself, might be a little confused because the Fallout Brotherhood of Steel game I knew was Fallout Tactics Brotherhood of Steel. But it turns out there was a whole separate Brotherhood of Steel game exclusive to the PS2, which was an isometric dungeon crawler looter shooter.
I'm looking this up right now. I didn't know this existed.
Apparently it's not
But it's not the Fallout, Bethesda Fallout, is it?
It's the same universe, but it doesn't play like a Fallout game. It was right before Bethesda picked it up.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so...
Is it awesome?
I haven't played it yet. I have heard that it's not like an incredible game, but if you like that style of gameplay, it is a lot of fun, especially to be in the Fallout universe while clearly not being a Fallout game. Like, it looks sick. It is straight up that PS2 dungeon crawler game that I want. It's got the same kind of menus. It's got the goofy isometric pre-rendered environments. I am very stoked to check it out. It is, however, very hard to find an affordable physical copy, and that is really bumming me out. So if anyone has any leads on them, please let me know in the comments. But otherwise, I will try it out in emulator, I suppose. I am fairly certain. Hang on. Am I right? Yes. So it is literally the same engine as the Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance and Champions of Norrath games.
Oh, so you must be freaking out.
Like, I have been over the moon trying to find a copy of this. And it apparently sold so poorly. There are so few copies out there.
Oh, man.
So
it does look like that. It's a little different camera angle.
Yeah, but
like,
when he picks up, when the character picks up like money and stuff, like it's the same engine. It is.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of thing I've talked about on the show over and over. When you have a good engine like this and can just make different experiences that use it, it makes me so happy because when it's good, you get so much more life out of it. And like, of course, I want to play a game that's in Fallout with like slime on the ground. And like the dude I'm watching right now is like some zombie guy with a spiked bat fighting rats. Like, of course, I want to see that alternate perspective on the same engine I love. Like, heck yeah, this looks amazing. Yeah. And so I'm always on the lookout for stuff like this. I will put some gameplay in the podcast video feed as well, because this kind of thing is what I'm always looking for. And by the way, Lord of the Rings War in the North is the same engine as well. But if you look at the difference between the PS2 games and the Xbox 360 or PC version of this game, like, they massively upgraded it, and it is glorious.
That's so cool. And it's sad it's delisted because it's a licensed game. So you can still buy physical copies on Amazon for $60. I just think it is so funny how licensing works, right? Because they ran a physical batch and it hasn't run out in some retailer, right? Amazon has 6 left over, because I'm looking at it going, Steam sale game, definitely, but it's not on GOG, not on Steam. Warner Brothers, come on.
You can get a Steam key for it from key sites, but it's like $200, and it's not. Don't buy it this game for $200. I got my Xbox 360 copy for $9 from GameStop 10 years ago, and you can still get it new because, like you said, they still have copies that never sold. But I am playing on PC. There are some, just a couple little quality of life mods for it that clean it up ever so slightly, but it's beautiful, and it clearly has the early DNA of the Shadow of Mordor games, of the, like, it's got like glory kills and like almost kind of Arkham-y, like the starts of Arkham-y combat before that was even a thing. Like, it's very cool to see the DNA that goes forward with the Lord of the Rings games, as well as how it evolved from the PS2 games that I loved. Anyway, back to comments.
That's awesome.
What is our favorite way to play video games? We got quite a few comments talking about this. Do you want to take away with Jonald Ridge 83?
Absolutely. Greetings, dual comp boys. I think in 2026, I'm working on new ways to game. I'm currently working on a second PC build. It will be a pretty high-end machine with a 9700X and a 9070 XT that I'm going to put Linux on and give that a shot. I have a 7800X 3D and a 4080 Super System that's staying with Windows 11, but I'm really wanting to try something that's not Windows. After that, I have an old gaming PC that I think I'm going to throw a 5060 Ti in and use for a living room gaming machine and Jellyfin server. I'd also like to get a Steam Deck. I would like to give handheld gaming another shot in 2026, and I can also use it as a PS Portal to play PlayStation 5 handheld. I'd really like 2026 to be the year I really get into my backlog and knock out some big stuff that I haven't been playing or I haven't played. My question for you both is, I know you both have a lot of gaming gear, so what is your favorite place and way to play your games? I know the Steam Deck is a big thing for both of you, but I'd like to hear about what other systems and specs you are using for different things. I think in 2026, with all the pricing issues for gaming hardware, it would be nice to hear about maybe lower spec things that still get the job done in style. It seems like everything is all doom and gloom, but hearing about machines that aren't the latest and the greatest or the most expensive things under the sun might give people ideas on how to still get the most out of the gaming hobby without having to consider blowing thousands of dollars when something cheaper and lower spec would work just as well. Love the show. Can't wait for more in 2026. Great comment. Should we read acoustics also before answering?
Sure. I also just wanted to highlight the lovely dichotomy of wanting to hear about lower spec options while absolutely flexing that you're building like a high-end upgrade to your already high-end system.
Yeah. So the 5060 Ti is the upgrade to the 4080 Super System. Is
no,
that right?
That's a third
PC. Separate machine. Dude, you are rolling in the sweet rigs right there. I am jealous. That's going to be a ridiculous living room PC.
Yeah, but Acoustic Blue, first time listening to your podcast, both of y'all talking about stuff in gaming that really matters, how not to give into FOMO, take things slow and enjoy gaming. I can really relate to the noise around gaming that kills my will to play. I never look up guides, optimal builds, etc., because it kills the joy of discovery. Most games baby you anyways and allow you to reset stats in some way, so there's absolutely no need to allow the internet to hold my hand. The same goes for hidden areas, hidden gear, etc. If I find it, great. If I don't, I won't know about it, so no harm, no foul. I also talk about similar stuff on my channel, but sometimes on the more whiny side. But the YouTube game is rough. Granted, my videos could always be made better, but I feel like I'm losing a part of myself trying to optimize the title and thumbnail to attract folks, which we can absolutely talk about in a separate version of this topic. But then, like I said, we had a few that goes together. There was chaotic heart something. The comment cut it off. Apologies. I really like having a dedicated emulation device. I use it to play PS2 and other emulated systems on my Steam Deck. But I used to play PS2 and other emulated systems on my Steam Deck. But I find having a dedicated, more portable device does the trick better. So now they're all in my Retroid Pocket 5. And then do you want to read Rusty Raven real quick?
Do you guys have any family PC gaming setups content? Do you have any PC gaming setup content? All my consoles are 6+ years old and I don't have a working PC. Can you just use one of these Intel NUCs like a console entertainment center, like an Xbox, but it plays PC games and such? New stuff for me. Ooh, I love this topic, Kipos.
So all that to say,
where do you want to start, yeah, dude?
I guess I want to start with like the initial question of like, what is our favorite way to play games? Because all of these comments kind of highlight the different steps of the journey that we've both taken through the show of like exploring alternate ways to play, whether it's an emulation device, a TV PC, a high-end PC, a Steam Deck. So I'm curious. I want to hear your answer first. Like what? Obviously, I know what you're jamming on right now, but like ultimately, big picture, what is your favorite way to play video games at the moment?
So I have a gaming PC that I built in 2016 with the help of Epos. And
that was 10 years ago.
That was 10 years ago. And I only upgraded parts of it a couple of years ago, purely because I was CPU capped for a few modern games. But I just pasted 3 pictures of my Steam library over to Epos, and maybe we can throw these up in the show. But this shows all of the games that I have been playing the last 2 to 3 months. And these are all games that run flawlessly on 10-year-old systems. Systems that you can build and acquire for, like, let's say $500 or less on eBay. And if you know what you're doing, probably like 300-ish bucks, or depending on like a... It depends on the timing of these things. And so there are, with the maybe exclusion of Elden Ring, which is just so poorly optimized, and Borderlands 4, all of the games that I enjoy on PC are things that run on really old systems. So that's to say, I've upgraded this super old, like 10-year-old PC. Now we have a 7800X3D in it, and I got a 5070 Ti in it, but that's purely for future proofing. I didn't need the upgrade whatsoever for the GPU. It just was the pricing's going up and they just discontinued that card, so it worked out well. My favorite way to play, okay, so that's like the main rig that I've spent the majority of all my gaming time on.
Right.
I took the bones of that really old 10-year-old PC, right? The old i7-7700K, the 1080 Ti that sat in there, and essentially put it into a living room PC. All I needed was, I had the old board, I had an old case, all that stuff. I just needed a few bits and bobs to get it working, and that is the Jellyfin PC. And I don't actually game on it. I did this summer, I made a few videos on it, and I found that I really just, if I'm going to play a PC game, I want to just play it on the PC. It is very cool to have a living room setup. Like, let's say you have people over, you want to play co-op, or you just need a different break. You can build a really sick living room PC depending on the types of games that you want to play for dirt cheap. Honestly, you don't need a $1,000 rig unless you're literally trying to compete with top AAA titles. But for me and the games that I play, there's like 4, dude. There's like 4 games that would be a reason for me to like want a super gnarly rig. But Fallout 3 or New Vegas, the Metro games, Just Cause, Skyrim, even Red Dead Redemption 2 runs well on old stuff. Slay the Spire, Monster Hunter World, Mad Max. It just, the list goes on and on and on of games that will run on such tiny, easy to lift machines. And so, yeah, my that's the way I play, is the PC, which is a ton of fun. But I'm telling you, I could be just as happy right now on a $300 used rig that I built with parts on eBay. Maybe like, let's say if you're totally starting from scratch, you have no drives, you have no case, $500 all in. But even then you could buy some nice stuff, right?
Yeah. And there's definitely like, it makes more sense to, if you make smart choices, and there are paths you can take to get feedback on that. But if you make smart choices, you can get a lower cost to entry now that makes it easier to upgrade later, so that you don't have to blow all your money all at once and can get iterative upgrades that continue making meaningful impacts rather than having to spend like $3,000 up front. Yeah, you could probably do 500, maybe at the moment closer to 800 with things, but like somewhere in that ballpark to get a really good starting point. And then as you save up more, if you are really into it, you can upgrade from there.
Yeah, it just depends on what you want to play. And that's always hard, I think, with somebody who's new to PC gaming. Yeah, they're like, well, I
don't know what you want to play.
I want to taste it all. I don't know what I'm going to enjoy. And that is a hard barrier. But if you're a competitive gamer who's just playing like Valorant or Fortnite, congratulations, you can get a potato and you're going to rip just fine at 1080p for most of these games. Maybe not Apex, but I mean, the esport competitive titles are so optimized. Some of those thrift store YouTube shorts are very over-exaggerated, okay, and not very true, but there is some element here of like, yeah, you can get on a 6700K and be just fine on a lot of these games.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Can I just say I really, really love how varied your play history is.
Yeah.
You've got roguelites, you've got RPGs, you've got shooters, you've got a transport simulator in here, you've got No Man's Sky, a chore simulator, you've got platformers and farming sims and speed running platformers and horror games and open world games and Monster Hunter and Halo. Like, this,
it's all over the place.
You got demos in there. Like, this shows to me, I love seeing a library like this, especially because sometimes I saw, and I don't want to like knock on the specific person, but there was at least two comments that I saw right away on your recent Steam sale video of someone complaining that you were only shouting out indie games, which, first of all, AAA games don't need us doing your marketing, like their marketing for them. But also, look at, I'm going to show the images on screen again. Look at this feed of games and tell me that the person who plays this is not having a ton of varied and deep fun. Because there is something for all moods, for all like gameplay styles, for everything you could possibly want to feel like playing. There is something there. And that just, that always makes me so deeply happy when it comes to games.
Well, the fun part is, especially if somebody is new to PC gaming and they look at these pictures and go, oh my gosh, well, congratulations. Just wait for the summer sale, the spring sale, the fall sale, because all of these titles are like the $5 to $10 games or less. Some of these are like $1.50 games.
Yes.
So if you go into your March or your summer sale with your $50 ready to go, congratulations. You're going to walk away with months and months and months worth of stuff here to play. I mean, the most expensive one in the list is Hades 2, and that was like a $20 game.
That's just because it just came out. But yeah, like, and Steam, Valve did just publish the both first and second half of the year events for Steam, where they have events basically every week throughout the whole year, where they are featuring, if it's not a formal sale, like the spring sale starts March 19th, but if it's not like a seasonal sale, they still have specific types of games. Like there's a tower defense fest. There's a horse fest. There's a typing fest. Like there are so many niche things where you can like find a couple cool games in a specific niche on sale. Like there are so many opportunities to get good, cheap games in this space that it is incredible. So I'm actually going to, I have flipped in the past 6 months my favorite way to game. I was all in on PC. I was all in, like, even as you were switching over to the TV side for a while, I was like, no, man, I like having my big screen up close. I like my beefy graphics card. I like mouse and keyboard. I want to stay at my desk. And some things have shifted in the past 6 months. And I think I would honestly say my favorite way to game is at the TV. Now, that's four games I can comfortably play on controller, which is not every game. And even like the Lord of the Rings War in the North, like I'm having a lot of fun playing that with mouse and keyboard right now. I don't think I'd want to swap it to controller. But for the games that we are enjoying on controller, having a PC or the PS5 or PS4 Pro, whatever we're gaming on at the moment, but having that at the TV, I can kick back on the couch. I can have some snacks. I can have... I've had lots of bodily aches and pains as I've gotten older. So having a heating pad or ice pack or whatever I need for the moment, like being comfy and cozy and having a, now I am lucky enough. I've got a pretty beefy, to answer someone else's question, I do have an Intel NUC gaming PC at my TV. It is a very small, I described it in the last DualCom. I'll post the same clips of it. It's like the size of like a 2 liter of soft drink. And it has a RTX 3080 in it. So like pretty beefy power, pretty solid to run things. And then I have a nice OLED TV. So like I have a good gaming experience. But even before we had that, like when we first had our kid, I was moving all of my gaming over to the TV so I could sit on the couch while I'm holding the baby, controller in both hands around the baby, like trying to squeeze in time when I could. The TV is a good experience. I think I shied away from it for a very long time, specifically because I needed glasses and I didn't know it. And so I was playing games like God of War 2018 and a couple other new PS4 Pro games at the time in 4K. And a combination of 4K means that the menus use a lot smaller text now because we can resolve it better. And the super high contrast brought on by HDR, I was having like a lot of eye strain troubles, and I had never really needed glasses before, and I didn't see any other scenario where I thought I needed it. And so I was just blaming like the game menus and like poor game scaling design. And it turns out I just needed glasses. And now that I have them, I love playing on the TV again.
That's awesome. It is fantastic. And if you were to ask what last year my favorite way was to play, it was sitting on a couch in that living room and enjoying it that way. But I think we should like get more direct, because I feel like people who are new to the PC building side of things, we should maybe give a couple of like clear pathways of recommendations of how to start. Yeah. And my biggest thing is like, if you are thinking about getting into PC and PC building, just consume and learn as much as possible.
Yeah.
Like, just watch a ton of stuff, because there will be no tutorial or no podcast or no piece of content that's going to be able to tell you exactly what to do and what will make you happy and fulfilled and all of those things. The beauty of the PC side, you used a term in the last DualCom called Tinkertown. Yeah. You get to go to Tinkertown, okay? And you do get to customize and pick and choose. And you will be so much better off if you take ownership of this decision.
Yeah.
Take ownership of your learning. There's more resources than ever. But if you approach this knowing, I am doing my homework, I know what I'm getting into here, and I know the type of games I want to play in the system I'm targeting to build that, you will do so much better. The people who I have seen not enjoy PC gaming, they completely just hate the Tinkertown side of it and the personal responsibility side of you're getting into something that requires you to learn and put some effort in, and the reward is substantial.
Yes. And even if you don't build yourself, which at this point I would absolutely recommend if you can, like you said, the thing with PC is you got to build up a little bit of generalized knowledge. I mean, you could go with like a PC part picker list. Someone's made a video on that specific list, follow their instructions, whatever. But that's, especially when you have to start adapting to sales because all the prices are going wild or whatever, like that's less likely to be your scenario. You kind of have to build up a little bit of general knowledge before you jump in, which you can do pretty easily by just like, there are so many PC building guides and analyses out there. Like, it doesn't take long. But if you do go pre-build, like I would still then transfer that energy into, like you said, learning to take ownership of the experience, getting the most out of it, optimizing settings, things like that. Because like my brother-in-law recently he has had a PS3 and an old laptop for like years and years, and wanted a PC that could actually run games, and wound up getting, we saw a MSI rig on sale at Costco, and it was like actually decently priced, and so we grabbed it.
Nice.
Like, that's fine.
Nice.
But you want to make sure that you're taking advantage of Steam sales and not just buying $60 flat games if there's no reason to, and learning some of the settings, especially when it comes to like getting the most out of your monitor, because it will change so much. I will say, if you're on Windows still, which no shade, even though I'm obviously advocating a ton against it, but no shade, especially for beginners, whether you're on Intel, NVIDIA, or AMD graphics cards, they have their graphics card software packages that you can run that should install with their drivers. Like for NVIDIA, it's just NVIDIA app. For AMD, it's AMD Relive. But they have tools to automatically optimize your games to at least get you to a good start. And if you haven't learned any settings yet, at least use that. But I would recommend starting to tweak from there. I know Digital Foundry makes some graphics tuning guides and things like that. It's a fun thing. And it's a cool thing because once you get into it, you do have a baseline of, like, things will just run and it will be fine. And then you get to improve it from there. You know, you're not starting from a bad place, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, the whole process is a ton of fun.
Yeah.
I love it. Like, it is enjoyable in and of itself, thinking about what you're going to build, playing around with the PC part picker list. And if it's your first real build, it is thrilling. You have such a connection with your system forever.
Yes.
And yeah, you'll probably have an issue. Maybe it won't post on the first boot. You're going to go back and read the manual. You're going to double check that you wired all of the case headers to the right things on the board, or the plugs to the headers on the board. And there is something super cool when you hit that startup screen the first time. And it's like, well, this is my machine.
Yes.
Now, I will say, a lot of people are asking about living room rigs. If it's your first time building a PC, I would never encourage somebody to do a mini ITX or a micro. Yeah. There's different case sizing standards, and those different case sizes pertain to the size of the motherboard.
Yes.
And when you have these really, like EPOS's Nook is beautiful. It is a really small PC with, what is it, a mini? It's micro ATX or mini ITX?
It's not
ITX
even like standard at all since it's a Nook. Like it's
their own board. Yeah.
But like you would not want
to build
that.
No. Trying to build in anything other than ATX for your first round is going to be very difficult. There's a lot of things to think about with your cooler height clearance, the GPU positioning, how many PCIe slots you have, and like cable management and stuff. So for everybody kind of asking, like the living room PC setup, if you don't have a gaming PC yet, I would just encourage like go ATX and build the setup for a desk. And you can always use Steam, their remote play feature. You still need a companion device to do that in the living room, but
it could be anything. Like it's built into some TVs. Yeah. You can do it on Apple TV. You can do it on
Roku,
a laptop,
maybe.
Probably a Roku. Like it's built into a lot of stuff. And I've heard no end of, like, there are so many people now that say like they feel no latency with it. So like you could build a
and
nice
the
desk
other good
PC
one, right?
And just stream and never even have a
isn't,
TV.
Isn't there like Moonlight?
Yes, Moonlight's like the upgrade.
Remote game streaming. Yep. Yeah, that one's like even better or something. So, boy, we could stay here for a long time. I think we'll pause right there. If people have questions, this would be like something we can explore in the future. But like, this is honestly what makes me super excited. Like when you're building a PC, remember, you're not just building something for gaming. You now have this like incredible tool that you can basically do anything on, any kind of creative work that you want to do.
Movies.
It's useful beyond gaming, you know?
It could be where you host all your movies or shows or pictures, right? You know, anything. The dream that the PS3 hoped to have and never lived up to.
But where should they start? Before we close here, where do they start consuming that content? What do they start learning? What do they start doing?
Honestly, Linus Tech Tips PC building guides, like, that's such a tame recommendation, but like every couple years they do a big like 2-hour, like, this is everything you need to know to build a basic mid-range PC guide. And like, there is nothing better that you can consume on that than those guides as they go. So I would definitely start there. Since this is part of what we talk about all the time, I do want to say that I understand and sympathize with the perspective of not wanting building and managing the computer to become your hobby if you just want a game, and I totally get that. But it's also a small amount of upfront work that you can do that saves you headache in the long run, and then you don't have, like, once you build a PC, it's very rare that you need to do anything with it unless you're choosing to upgrade, like, in terms of managing it. You're not constant. It's not like a car where you got to like keep the oil changed and swap out brake pads, and like you're not managing it all the time. And so I'd say I understand those apprehensions, but it's worth the upfront investment.
If it's encouraging to anybody, EPOS is the samurai when it comes to tech. I've always been like on the novice side. I don't think I've ever had any part failure other than a drive failing. Yeah. I've built 4 or 5 now at this point, and people can do it. Anyone can do this. It's an attitude thing. You just take ownership of your choices and your learning. And I think it's probably a year old. Like LTT does a new video on PC building basically every year, and they always get 6 or 7 views. But there's a good 2-hour one from last year that walks you through like all of the basics and budget and ideas and then how to make it. And I will say it's like Legos for the most part. And if you take your time, it's hard to screw up, right? Like if you're brute forcing and not taking your time and not reading, but this is not, you're not soldering stuff.
You're not.
Everything has a nice place where it goes easy peasy.
Yeah, people like to equate building a PC in terms when they're scared of it to like building your own car and be like, well, I don't want to. It's not the same thing at all. Like I treat it.
No.
For a long time, we treated tech as this like esoteric foreign thing that is unlike anything. To me, it is like any other household appliance or part. Like obviously you're not building your dishwasher from scratch, but like if you need to fix your toilet or build a shelf that goes in your bedroom or something, like it's on that level. Like you just follow the instructions and don't freak out too much and you will be fine.
I think that's a great place to take our first
break. Alrighty. See you on the other side.
Bye-bye.
Woo!
welcome back to the chat of partying.
So in the last episode, we talked about, we responded to a comment talking about games that allowed you to make your own content in the game, whether it's Little Big Planet or Super Mario Maker, that kind of stuff, and why those games have fallen to the wayside a bit. And we had a couple comments sharing their experiences with that kind of experience in a game.
Yes, we did. And let's start with Masco. He says, I actually played a lot of the movies with my roommate in college. We would make movies based on real movies we liked. So much fun. I remember being introduced to Donnie Darko via his interpretation of that masterpiece. Some dude in a rabbit suit walking around being part of every scene, but not actually doing anything. I hadn't seen the movie at the time, so that was the only reference I had for years. And our next comment, Epos.
From Back in Track Games, backintrack.gg. Guitar Hero Metallica had a custom track mode that I played almost as much as the excellent soundtrack. Someone was making custom tracks for all of the Vadram Mario tracks. Look it up on YouTube. And those were some of the best drum tracks in the game if you grab them. Miss custom creation tools in games.
It's so funny Masco brings up the movies because I owned a box copy of that and I hadn't even thought of it till he talked about it. And it's from Lionhead, the people who would go on to make Fable. So I'm guessing Peter Molyneux was involved in some way. And
he's making a new game again, by the way.
Apparently it's his final game, right?
Supposedly.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I had Lego Movie Maker and it was
I always wanted that.
It was so sick, dude. It was like the crunchiest little webcam, and you would take 24 stills a second, and it would let you then combine them easily with a really buggy piece of software to create stop-motion Lego films.
That's
and it was
sick.
Unbelievably cool, dude. I still love making videos, so it's kind of funny to see the roots. Like, here we are still making videos. They're obviously not stop-motion film, but it's pretty rad, and I'm glad that he brought this up, and I didn't know Guitar Hero ever had a track builder mode.
I honestly didn't. I know there's always been the custom scene for it with like modding in tracks, porting them over between the games. And then now if you want something similar, there's Yarg, yet another rhythm game, which like combines all of them together. And you can use basically any device that can send a signal, audio or electrical, to your computer. You can use it as an instrument in the game, which is bananas. They have a ridiculous amount of support.
Cool.
But I had no idea that the official game supported tracks at some point, which is really sick. I mean, we talked about this a ton in the last episode. I mostly just wanted to shout out these examples. But you bring up the movies thing as a kid. Like, I feel like there's so much inspiration that comes from empowering kids in that way with these tools. And I think back to, like, all of my time spent in Kid Picks and any of those goofy photo makers. I had two different programs. So my very first computer was the Hot Wheels Windows 98 computer, which was sick. And it came with a whole bunch of CDs in a binder. I wish I still had it. The only thing I have left from that is the mouse. And it had a Rescue Hero coloring page creator, which was sick. I would waste all of our ink printing out coloring pages for me to color. It had a Tonka truck, custom Tonka maker that you could like make stickers with or like coloring sheets out of. And you can make your own trucks, combine like the wheels and the truck pieces, which was a lot of fun. And then the Hot Wheels game, you can make stickers, you can make your own custom cars and all that stuff. And most of that was for the game. But like those tools that just let kids like turn creation into play and give kids inspiration to make stuff. I feel like there is not enough of that these days. And it's really hard because I'm trying to find that stuff for my kid and introduce it to him because I think it's so powerful. And I feel like we've really gotten away from that these days. And so like, For Christmas, we got him a couple games like that for his, he got my sister's old DS. So like when we're taking long car trips or something, we want to, instead of giving him a phone, we want to give him something controlled and offline. And so we got a game where like he can draw stick figures and turn them, like play them on video game levels that he can draw on. I forget what it's called. It's like Stickman or something on the DS.
That's really cool.
And then I want to get him started with Kid Picks and stuff. I really think there was so much value to those tools, and there were so many of them when like you and I were kids. I really hope we see that come back in some way.
I would say Minecraft took such a huge like space for that because that is so, I mean, worldwide phenomenon. And I continually think back like, man, I wish I was playing Minecraft right now. I would love to build something. I'd love to have a world. I'd love to do all of those things. And so I don't know anything about the Roblox world other than it's like insane, right? And it's just tons of user created games within one main game, and
there's a lot of bad
weird junk with it. Yeah, so I don't really know about that, but I feel like there are plenty of like super creative sandboxy games now. They're just more they're more first person 3D, and I don't like the term, but friend sloppy.
Yeah. You know? So this is very old man yells at cloud, and I've had some people in comments disagree with me on that, but I think those tools are great, or those games are great, and the sandbox provides awesome creative opportunities for kids, and I'm not going to pretend those aren't creative experiences. But I do think, like you said, putting it in the context of like a first-person 3D game, it's limiting the range at which someone is really like, I don't want to say that, like inspired to do things with that. Like the kind of experiences we're harking back to, and like the movies as a game, like it allows you to get experience and inspiration to do many different things, like make movies or paint or draw or make stickers or write. Like there was along with KidPix, there was, what was it called? Storybook Weaver, where you could make your own stories with like picture books like we had in grade school and make those and print those out and stuff. Like it inspired writing along with the tools that inspired coloring and things like that. And you could argue those explorations exist with video game creation tools, because we've had Machinima, like not the network, but like the medium, like Red versus Blue, things like that, where it's like people are writing their custom stories and filming them in the games and things like that. But that's so less accessible and not really there for kids. That was teenagers and young adults doing, because it was it's still a very advanced thing that I feel like we are still missing something in the gamified version of it versus just a fun thing.
Yeah, it's harder to take those risks. I agree. Yeah. Like you're not going to see the same level of, we made a box copy, like the movies, and the amount that we need to move to offset the development cost is minuscule compared with today. And I don't know, maybe the indie space, we're missing some of that. I just looked at Newgrounds. Apparently Newgrounds still exists, dude.
Yeah.
I know that doesn't fill like the younger skew of stuff, The fact that there's still Flash games like on here, I don't even know. Probably not Flash, right? Wasn't that retired forever ago?
It was. There's a lot of emulator stuff for it now, which is really cool. There's some stuff I'm hoping to show my kid through that. But yeah, it's Neopets is still around too.
Speaking of which, games on easy and lesser played genres. Our next comment is from Eric Draven, 3654. I have decided to play games on easy mode, and that has made a huge change in my gaming routine. I am 44, and I don't have neither the time or the energy to get good. I just want to have fun and relax for a few minutes. Have you ever talked about it in your podcast? Anyway, cheers from Spain and Merry Christmas. Great comment. Should we read the next one before answering?
Yeah. So Sandy says, how do you deal with genre burnout and trying out genres you don't usually play? For 2025, I played Western JRPGs instead of JRPGs because I played way too many in 2024. And I found I actually liked those more than traditional JRPGs. But I also played a lot of platformers because I don't usually like them. And I found that I dislike that genre more than before.
Yeah, bravo, bravo. See, the discovery phase and then the conclusion.
Yeah.
That's great.
So we have talked about easy mode on the podcast before, but I think those two go in hand in terms of just kind of discovering, like you said, the discovery phase of different ways that you want to play. I am more and more in the mind of like, that was my cat meowing. I almost want to default to playing games on easier difficulties because in many cases, I would rather just have a good time and get through them than deal with frustrating parts. I personally, and this is not a flex in any way, but like there are a lot of games where if I bump it to easy, I'm not doing a whole lot anymore. And so I still want the experience of literally playing the game. And some games, like, they get a little too easy. But I do love, we've seen a really strong evolution, both in difficulty options and the, like, scope of them. So, like, the bigger story games now, and even Baldur's Gate, like, they have easy, medium, normal, difficult, crazy difficult, one shot, one kill, you're dead. Get
forever.
You start over.
Iron Man.
And then they also have a story mode or an explorer mode or whatever, which still gives you the combat, like the basics, but really like handholds you a lot through it. And I love seeing that. And then we have games like Lady Dracula, which is still only in demo, but Lady Dracula, Doom the Dark Ages, and there's been a few others where you get to fine tune individual mechanics to your liking. So like if you find a parry window to be too tight, you can tweak just that. If you're like, man, that's the one thing holding me back, you can change that and fine tune your experience and make it easier in that regard without dumbing everything else down, which to me is incredible, both from an accessibility standpoint and just having fun. And so
I remember when we talked about this, it literally on what you're saying, like it Rebirth, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I got to the final chapter. I didn't do a bunch of the side content, and I knew because I've played a boatload of JRPGs. I knew to get level ready, it would have been another like 3 or 4 hours of grinding.
Yeah.
I didn't care. I dropped it to easy and I finished the game and I was perfectly happy. And maybe someday I go back, but like, yeah, who cares? I'm glad that that setting exists now that I'm older.
Yeah. Like I am at the point in my life that I also don't have time or interest in quote unquote getting good. I still want to be challenged. Sometimes, honestly, there are times when I'm playing a game that I don't mind if I'm just like mindlessly killing all the enemies and making progress. Like sometimes that really doesn't take away from anything. And I think back to, I mean, when I was a kid, back in my day, we had Game Sharks and Action Replays, and I had Cheat Engine on my computer to like memory edit my games and get unlimited ammo.
It was fun to do that stuff.
Or I'd make my buddy play through my copy of Metal Gear so I could unlock the Patriot
bandana
and run around with Rambo style with that. Like,
yep,
we had those options, and then they kind of went away for external reasons. And so I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I absolutely encourage anyone playing games, getting into them, just like, you're supposed to have fun. If it's not fun, it doesn't matter whether you got good or not. You're not having fun. And so that should always be the priority. And same thing with genres. Like if you are feeling like you're sticking too tightly to whatever you normally play, absolutely branch out. I don't know that I'd consider Western JRPGs versus JRPG. I also hate the name Western JRPG.
I think it's just Western RPG.
Yeah, it's a contradiction.
Not that it matters. Who
Western
cares?
Western Japanese RPG, but
yeah,
I know.
I'm sure there's a sub genre. You know, yeah. I've just been calling them rogue games
because
trying to battle with people of like and light.
Yeah.
Most people don't even know.
I grew up in the pedantic about genre Total Biscuit camp, so I've always been like, that's not what the genre is. But like, I will say, I've also been in the camp of like. I talked about at the end of last year, like I discovered I actually just don't like Metroidvanias that much. There are a couple that appeal to me sometimes, but like I keep wanting to get into them because they're all these like cool retro games with like cool aesthetics and whatever. And then I don't play them because the backtracking and the collecting key thing, and the difficulty spikes just aren't really what I want. I like a more traditional Castlevania hack and slash game, or to be a completely different genre altogether. And so I only found that out by exploring, by playing games that are close to what I've thought I liked and accepting. Like the biggest thing for me, both with difficulty and genre, is being okay. And I guess this plays on, I'll give a shout out to our Patreon in just a moment. Being okay cutting off things that you aren't enjoying, whether it's a difficulty level that you feel you're supposed to, quote unquote, supposed to play at, or a genre that you think you should like or that you've liked before but seem to not like anymore. Cutting off a thing that you're just not enjoying anymore and being confident in that makes your playtime so much more of relaxed playtime.
Yeah.
And I want to give a shout out because we had a topic about this over on our Patreon that we announced at the start of the show where we talk about doing the same thing with hobbies, as I'm going through that exact experience with giant 10-year-long hobbies right now. And it's a big shift with my life. But similar message of like, if you dislike a genre and you just aren't enjoying it anymore, don't keep making yourself play it. No, you're not beholden to expectations of what you play or how you play.
Yeah, I feel like the difficulty discussion gets so overblown the last few years, and it just boils down to like, if you're happy as a player, play it that way. You're done.
Yes,
that's it. It doesn't matter. And there are games like, I don't have fun when it's overtly easy. I like a challenge on certain types of games. And if I make it too easy and it's just mindless, then I ask, like, what am I doing with the time here? But remember, like, these are all like arbitrary things. Like, yes, there's really cool joy and accomplishment in level one beating Dark Souls, right? Or whatever the super challenge would be. But you don't have to like go rain on anybody else's parade.
Yeah.
Because you're like the goated gamer in this particular game or whatever. Like, just it is all arbitrary.
Yeah.
It's all made up. Like, it's all things that we've created.
Everyone is different, and only certain types of people really like that experience. And the whole conversation about, like, artistic intent and stuff gets really messy with that. I remember when it was a whole heavily debated thing with Returnal about adding in save states, because you literally, outside of suspending your PlayStation, you could not pause your game in Returnal. And a lot of people get really defensive about that. It's like, well, you're supposed to play it. You're supposed to play it as the run. But to me, the core thing, and I feel this more and more over time, the core thing is respecting the player. And as a player, I need the ability to play the game on my own time. If I can't play anything else on my PlayStation because it's going to end my run in Returnal, what that led to was me not playing Returnal. And then once they added that in, I was then playing Returnal. And I'm pretty sure above all else, the devs want people to play and enjoy their game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, those obviously, I remember when Baldur's Gate came out, there were so many people that were just like, well, if they just add a real-time combat mode, I'd enjoy the game. At that point, you are fundamentally altering the entire core of the game, and that can't be done because that was not the intent. But that's different than just, like, adding a save and resume option or adding a difficulty tweak or something. Like, that's very different. Even From Software did not build their games originally in mind with people just not being able to play it. Like, I remember reading the quotes from Miyazaki, who are just like, yeah, I've heard the game is really good, but I can't seem to play it, so good luck. And it's just like, what?
Yeah.
He's like, I suck at this game, so I hope other people can play it. And I'm just like,
we got a lot more, so let's keep rolling.
Let's keep rolling.
Gaming Book Club, you want to take this one?
Charmed Venus. I've been playing Twilight Princess for the first time on the Steam Deck, and it's been fun so far. GameCube emulation seems a lot more stable than PS2. It absolutely is, so I haven't had a ton of issues. I have a question. Have either of you considered a gaming quote-unquote book club? I love the idea of playing a story game at the same time as friends and meeting up to discuss the narrative and notes we made along the way. Does making content around games sour the idea of that for you? So we have... We have brought this up a couple times because we have a buddy who does this with his friends, and it seems like such a cool idea, but you and I have both come to the conclusion that it would not work for us.
No.
It plays to, for me at least, the struggle I already have when, like, and I haven't engaged in this in a while, but like when a new multiplayer game comes out and it's like, yeah, I really want to play that with my buds, and they're playing like 5 days a week, and I maybe get to do every weekend or every other weekend join them, and then I'm missing out on everything. And then it's just, it kind of taints the experience. It's not even making content around the games that really affects it for us. It's that we literally just can't keep up. Like, even if we both sat down and are like, yeah, we're going to play this game, we just can't play at the same pace, and being forced to play it when we're not enjoying it would sour it. Like, that would sour it for me more than making any sort of content well on it.
Yeah, I just don't have the time to make the commitment. Like, that's the first thing. It's like, I mean, that list of games is long that I've shown you, but yeah. I mean, plenty of that is recording for a Steam sale video that I did a month ago. But there's plenty of days I just don't play. And the days that I do get to play, it's probably 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes before bed. I'm really not getting that much play time right now.
Same.
And it's inconsistent on the days. And I've never been happier with with gaming in the last like long little bit. I'm super pleased there. So we would obviously drag the group down if we're trying to do a 10-hour game. And then I wouldn't want the commitment of like having to feel like I had to play it, because right now it's truly like, every day is a different day. What do I feel like playing, and kind of booting it up that way? And then the third thing is the concept I think that is so beautiful about like a gaming book club is doing that with your real friends, doing that with your community.
Yeah.
And like, as much as Epos and I deeply appreciate this community, recognize this is still a parasocial thing. There's like a big gap between what I would see the biggest and like core benefits of like playing a game with your homies and talking about it. Like, that is so cool. Go and do that with your real friend group.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, obviously the parasocial thing is a different conversation topic, but I think there's something super important in recognizing that distinction of like content creators and the stuff you're viewing online. There is a really cool element here of interactivity and things that didn't exist with previous types of media, but that cannot be your sole connection to community. That is unhealthy.
Yes. And so if you are in a position in life where you've got like work buddies or something where you have a similar life structure, You've got a similar level of commitment, a similar interest in the games. It sounds like a wonderful time. And I think earlier in my life, like especially when I was still working retail and stuff and had those buddies, you know, same schedules, same expectations and whatever, like similar place in life, I think I would have enjoyed the heck out of it, or in college or whatever. Neither of us personally are in a place in life where that makes any sense. And it's purely, it's going to be a personal thing. Like whether it's a good idea or not is completely up to individuals. Now, I will say, obviously you're losing the social component, but like I am a huge advocate, and I have a whole video I want to make on this. I'm a huge advocate of journaling your game's progress and like doing kind of a book club on your own where it's just like, here's what I'm playing lately. Here's what I'm enjoying, and kind of tracking that, not in a completionist task tracking way, but in a like experience enjoyment tracking way, tying into our original podcast idea of the feelings test of just like, what am I feeling this week? I will often, I have my little pocket notebooks. I usually at the start of a work week, I will make a broad to-do list that I will pretend is for the Monday or Tuesday I start the week on, but in reality is going to take the whole week to finish. But I will also make a list of like the games or activities in games that I am excited to try to get to that week. And it's so it's kind of like a to-do list, but more like a fun, like, here's what I hope I get to do list. And so you can take some of the elements of what a book club might be and make it for yourself, or make content around it if you do want to share it, or have a community that you share the thoughts with. And maybe not everyone's playing it at the same time, but it could be fun. But I personally, yeah, we just don't
and
have
they can be
room
your
in
online
our lives
friends.
At the moment.
Yeah, I wanted to add too, they can be online friends, yeah, right? Yeah. Like it doesn't have to be, I'm just saying it's really useful to have those bonds and those connections. And some of our best like buddies came from the Halo days, right?
Yeah.
And I've gotten the chance to meet, you know, some of these people in real life, in person, and it is incredibly cool. But yeah, it's such a great concept. I love that Blizzard Ball and his crew continue to do that, yeah, because it's just like, well, that's the dream. And they also have LAN parties, and
yeah,
somebody I was just talking yesterday with Masco about LAN parties, and that would be so fun. That would be so rad to go to one of those things or to go to a competitive event. It's just, yeah, it's not in the cards right now where, you know, we're at time wise. There's just no way.
Yeah.
So
it's one of those, like, I always have the sensitivity of like, when I don't keep up, then I just bail. Because
yeah,
if I were to join something like this, I'd have fun for the first couple of days being like, yeah, I'm playing this game. And then when my interest wanes or I'm just busy because life happens and someone's like, all right, man, I put 4 hours into this game last night. I'm already at chapter 6 and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, I am now way behind. And then the next day I'm going to be even more behind. And it's like, all right, this is no longer for me. Bye. And that is not a good feeling. And I don't want to put myself in that position.
Yeah, and if there was the time, I'd want to go do like co-op fun games, like a Helldivers, yeah, 2 session or Deep Rock Galactic, yeah, which I've never gotten to play. Like that would be super fun. Or even the Lord of the Rings, The War in the North game.
I would love to do co-op sessions of that. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like made as a 4-person co-op game,
yeah,
right?
Yes. Or 3-person. But yeah, co-op session games, 100% the vibe. They're adding multiplayer to Jotun Slayer, which I'm really happy for. So I wanted to highlight a comment to you. And I'm going to try to read it. And put it out there first with no judgment because I'm entirely curious as to your reaction to it. Okay?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And so I mean zero judgment. I am so curious about this experience. So this is from I'm Spiraling Out. Long question, which ironically is one of the shorter comments that we've had today. This year, I've come to accept how much I value curation over cataloging. I ended up deleting my Steam account of over 200 games because I realized that having all of those games that I didn't want but got in a bundle doesn't accurately represent my individual taste. When I die, I would like my closest peers to play the games that I have fond memories with so that they can have fond memories of me while they play these sentimental games. I now have a new Steam account with a handful of games that matter to me. Do you share a similar value regarding curation and taste? What games would you like to be remembered with? Sorry for the macabre question.
Yeah. Totally understand the first little bit. Like, I wouldn't delete the library of those games. I would just put them in a folder, right, in Steam and just say, hey,
yeah,
these aren't for me right now, and I didn't choose them. I didn't curate them. I can understand the second half, like a legacy about what you've played and whatnot, I think can tie back into what you just said. There's so many tools for sharing experiences. I'd be more, like, akin to encouraging I'm Spiraling Out to like write thoughts and some commentary to go along with why he chose those games and what the significance was and how that would relate to like their closest peers or let's say next of kin or something like that. If they ever had kids, it'd be like, you know, this is dad's favorite game and it really taught me a lot about these themes and it's really important and I want you to experience it so you understand more about me. That makes like a lot of sense.
Yeah.
In some ways, you know, and the methodology of like nuking the account for some people, they need like the really clear, clean break. I'm not that same type of person, but I do think if you had to, I mean, we've talked about this before on separate videos, I think on our channels, maybe not directly, but like the games that have impacted me the most in my life. I can absolutely tell you, let's take a step away from games for a second. My favorite book is The Hobbit, and I love the thematics of that narrative. You have Bilbo who has to leave the comfort of his space and go on an adventure that's uncomfortable and difficult and challenging. And through getting out of the comfort zone, he discovers so much about himself. He grows, and when he returns, he's a different person. I have drawn so much real life impact from the narrative themes within that story that it is something that I think is very key and a really awesome piece of storytelling that has impacted me in a deep way. And I feel like everybody listening has, can I say modicum? Is that a word? Like, yeah. What is the movies and films and music and art that has helped them see things differently, to think about things differently. And one of the most powerful and cool things you can do is to be able to place that in commentary to share with others. Yeah. And I'll end here, and then I want to hear what you have to say. Like one of my favorite things is if someone can actually summarize and explain a piece of content, why it's substantial to them, that's the most powerful recommendation for me. I hate
yes.
when I get a text message of, you've got to watch this. And then they just send me a YouTube video. I want to know why I should watch it through your understanding and interpretation of it. If you send me a few sentences about, dude, this video sparked this idea in me, I really think you need to check this out, then I am like 1,000% more interested in watching that. And I think that is maybe, do you think that's what he's going for in the comment here?
I think so. I think you're right that some people really just need to ditch everything to feel like they have control. I don't mean this negatively, but like feel like they have control over what they're actually having. I cannot personally imagine nuking my Steam account. I have over 1,500 games, but I get the sentiment and I think you're on the right track with that. I would also, again, though, to me, curation of your own possessions does not inherently mean anyone will, and I don't want to sound super morbid with this, but that doesn't mean anyone else will find sentiment in it. Like, I have lost many family members, and going through their random possessions, whether they were curated or not, is not a fun time. And I don't assume that any of them meant anything.
Yeah.
Just because.
Well, sometimes there is some joy, but I'm just saying, well, yeah. With,
there's some of it.
It's hard.
Yes.
It is really hard.
It is really hard. And I don't think that anyone will assume that just because you only had these, that they were the most important to you. I do think passing down the history of it, the storytelling, the lore, the legend, the, you know, like we do with any sort of family memories or whatever, that active role still has to be taken for that to really work. Whether it's a personal journal, like if you're really tied in, like you said, it's very macabre, so like I don't want to be on the dark side, but like if you're tied to this specific legacy when you pass kind of thing, whether it's a personal journal you keep that's going to be like, open this and explore, go forth my son, whatever, like go for
put
it.
Put a treasure map in there. I'm just giving you a pro tip. Put a treasure map in there or something, dude. You know, a riddle, an ARG. Yeah. I don't know.
Or whether it's, you know, keeping a backlogged or writing or just sharing. Like, I think to a more literal, like, short-term sense, anytime I try to get my kiddo to play a different game other than his favorite games, he's uninterested. If I'm like, hey, let's play this thing, it is very hard to get his buy-in. But if he sees me playing it and it looks just fun enough and he's in the right mindset, then he starts asking about it and I can make it seem exciting and then he's interested. And I think similarly applies to anything that you possess that you want someone else to care about. Like you said, you have to tell the story about why it matters. You can't just say, hey, come look at this. And for me, what you possess is not the same as cataloging in the first place. So yeah, like if you're making a list of the games that you own, just making a spreadsheet of every game that you own is not going to make them compelling to someone to feel sentimental about it. But if you do make a long lasting journal log of some sort of the ones that do mean the most to you and why, there's got to be that connection, the human element of why, not just this was important. I think that's a huge deal. And I think that's very important. And I really hope with my kid that I get to continue to pass on the games and movies and whatever that I love. And I'm going through the same thing with my wife right now. Like, we've been watching through a lot of the shows that she liked growing up that specifically like stuck with her. And a lot of them are silly stuff. Like, it's little anime, or like, I had never seen much of Sailor Moon. So we watched through Sailor Moon Crystal, and right now we're watching another anime. But these are things that like helped form core personality things and would have influenced my personality a lot growing up. And so like, it's really meaningful to share this experience now. And the same thing can absolutely apply to games. But for me personally, nuking what I own to only filter that just isn't the play.
I almost think it's probably like, what if they just bought Humble Bundles or did Amazon Prime games? And like, there's a lot of fluff and junk in those things.
And that's,
I can recognize a clear start, but I'm with you. Like, I'll go for it.
I was just going to say, ironically, 200 games is low enough that it's a lot easier to fresh start with that than when you get over 1,000.
Yeah. And I like the concept of being intentional, you know, with your choices and thoughts around legacy.
Yeah.
Right. We all leave impacts around the people we interact with every single day. And like you just mentioned, like with your family, the choices that you make and the environment you foster, these are all things that you put a lot of time and attention and effort into to give your kiddo the best opportunities possible to try and, you know, show him and teach him what you want. And I think that is a really cool idea. And we do similar, like, if somebody has a very curated collection of vinyl albums that they bequeath to, you know, one of their kin, there's some level of significance there. Yeah. And you could probably be like, oh, this is grandpa's record collections and he wanted me to have it. And that now has some deep sentiment. And it's cool to hear, like, this is the music that really meant something to him.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's so hard with digital to just like, since there's no physical representation, it's hard to not.
It's a QR code in the will.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right.
Let's. Is the future of FPS smaller single mode games? Pocket Wyvern 98, long time listener and commentator of the DualCom podcast, says, I think one way we could see FPS go is that instead of having multiple game modes, we could end up having smaller games focused on a single game mode that don't need to draw in a massive audience to survive like the current live service games do. In fact, I think we are starting to see some of this with games like Helldivers 2 being focused on PvE and the upcoming Halo campaign Evolved only having co-op multiplayer. Oh man, oh, you know what I'm jumping at the bit to say, Epos. We had the perfect formula and they threw it away.
Yeah. I don't think we're getting back to the formula that we had, but I do think what Wyvern is suggesting here is, it's kind of what I've been preaching for a while, and not everyone has agreed with it, but like, I really think if we're going to struggle to manage our big multiplayer franchises this much, then everything should be its own SKU. Like with Call of Duty, why is there not just an annual Call of Duty campaign with zombies and multiplayer and Warzone being their own separate things? Why are they and we see the consequences of them not separating it just continue to compound on themselves, because the Call of Duty launcher at this point is this giant unified mess that is like 500 gigs and no one knows how to get what they want out of it, because they don't know. They want everything to be continuing across each other, and none of it makes any sense when you're doing annual games. And so I really think with a lot of stuff, separating things out into separate SKUs that can be run by separate teams with separate priorities might be the way to save it. It is not the combined three mode $60 package that we used to get. And I don't think
that's what I want.
I know. I don't think we're getting back to that. But I do think there is a path here. And it is shocking to me that no one is willing to do that, because it seems like such an easy option. And we already saw experiments with this. Both Call of Duty and Halo had online only SKUs that they tried launching. They just limited it to like Eastern Asian audiences, or Russia, I think, for Halo Online. But like,
yeah.
I think that was a really solid idea. I think Halo 5's Warzone being its own standalone thing, free to play on PC, even though that would mean microtransactions and whatever, I think that would have kept a core Halo multiplayer audience engaged in a big way and invited new ones. I think there are so many missed opportunities with that, but project management right now is in such a spiral that I don't think anyone can really make those kinds of big plays. Like, I think they are really putting the train tracks in front of the carts at the moment, and they just can't make those kinds of shifts right now. And that's so hard to imagine, being in charge of like multi-billion dollar franchises and not being able to make like proper moves. And this is one of those, like, if I were in charge of things, I would just like halt for 2 years, do this and come back. But I know that it doesn't work that way. I do like the example of like Helldivers 2. It's just this PvP, or I'm sorry, PvE, like sort of extraction, but just like horde mode game. I would not want them to add other modes. Now, this contradicts what I've said before of like when Apex came out, I really wanted, or PUBG, for example, I really wanted a TDM mode, both so I could just easily jump in and out for shorter bursts, but also so I could get more practice in on the guns and stuff, because it's hard to do that in 30 minute, you see three people battle royale modes. But part of me is like, yeah, if we could just get a Quake like TDM game and then a Capture the Flag game, and those could be managed and budgeted better, maybe that would be the path. The problem for me as the I refuse to stay with one game only forever kind of player is that I don't see myself being able to keep up skill that way, because every game is going to have its own tweaks on physics and mechanics and stuff, and it is so hard to juggle across games like that. And so that's a big downer. Maybe in this theoretical situation, if we're moving away from the live service paradigm and some of the priorities there, the expectation isn't that you know life the one game, and maybe it could be improved. I don't know.
I'm going to be selfish. I'm telling you, we had the perfect thing. Titanfall 2, Gears of War 1 through Judgment, Halo 1 through Halo 4-ish and 5, and even I'll leave MCC out of it. The $60 game that brought with it, day one, a great single player that had a multiplayer component, couch co-op and online co-op. It had multiplayer, and it had like basically everything you needed there day one for social and ranked. You had custom opportunities and then a map maker mode,
and then they added in the
theater system. And then you got a new one of those every 3 years. The expectation was not on Bungie to create an endless world for 20 years off of Halo 3. Okay, the idea was they worked for 3 years. This is the finished product. Go play it. And yes, we will update the multiplayer, but you're not going to play this for the rest of your days. And Titanfall 2 was phenomenal. You got a great campaign day one, a phenomenal multiplayer day one, 9 months, of free support that brought some new modes, eventually a PvE mode, and then they said, adios, we're moving on to the next game. It has become so clear how unsustainable live service is when you have 1,000-person studios like Bungie unable to keep up with player demand for content. It burns out the devs. The profitability is so just not stable. And the unfortunate thing is we'll probably never see it coming back. We've talked about this at length. We've analyzed this at length. They made astronomically more money on the few live services that do blow up that everybody is willing to take that gamble in the high, like, money stakes publishing department. They would rather have 4 or 5 super sinkers that just, like, fail at the chance of having one of the live service behemoths that crush it and kill it. So I don't like the segmentation. I'm all down, right? If we're not going to get the $60 thing, we're not, I know, or $70 or $80 thing, we're not going to get that anymore until maybe somebody comes in and does it successfully. But I get that's unrealistic. So yeah, I'm totally down with, like, Microsoft should have spun up a freaking ODST Helldivers game. Okay, duh, come on. But the problem is everybody's having to pitch, well, how are you going to support it for 10 years? Arc Raiders is already talking about their like bajillion year plan. And it's like the number one way to turn me off from the game is knowing that that's going to be your studio's like focus is drip for the next 10 years. It's going to burn your devs out. Your player base ain't going to be interested that long. I'd rather it be like, look, I hope Helldivers 3 is in construction right now. I hope they're not going to spend the next 5 to 10 years on Helldivers 2. Come on, like, these are equivalent, like, the difference between Halo 2 and 3 and Reach are, like, crazy significant title updates, but it's still the same bones, it's still the same framework, they don't have to go back to the drawing board, and I hope we move more in that direction, because I am so over the 10-year game.
Can I say something crazy that you've just made me realize?
Yeah.
The biggest tragedy here, in my opinion, or the biggest irony, is that the games that were built to have a shorter shelf life had the longest impact.
Yep.
The games that stuck with you for that 3, 4, maybe 5 year period of your life, where you were in a specific period of your life, rooted themselves in where you were in that phase of your life and you hold on to that for way. That is why we wax nostalgic so much about Halo 2, Halo 3, those early Xbox Live days, because of the phase of life that we were in. If those games were still running the same as they were through college and through adulthood, we would not have the same feelings attached to them, and we would not have the same basically like loyalty to them, because it just, it would have overstayed its welcome. And I can't imagine that kids that grew up playing Fortnite and are still playing Fortnite as they turn into adults really hold it in the same kind of feeling and meaning. And like, and plus when it's a infinitely supported live service game, the game that you remember, even if you do remember a specific phase of it, is not the game you can log in and play now. And that's horrible.
You're the product.
Yeah.
With the free live to service game, the game is not the product. You as the person are the product. And that's why I fight so intensely for like defending that $60 yeah, every 3 year kind of model during the 360 era. It is the most pro consumer package that we have seen in the last little bit. When I bought Halo Reach, I owned all of the campaign content, all of the multiplayer content.
Yeah.
These free-to-play live service games, it's your gym membership. Here's your three-month, $10, whatever it is now, $15 or $20 battle pass, which is just designed there to FOMO you into playing every single day. And there is a balance. There are some games who strike that balance well, who make sure the game design is front and center, and that's where the effort is. I think that's why there's so many people who are just like crazy enthusiastic towards the finals. You bring up the finals to anybody in that community who plays it, they're like, it's the best. It's awesome. We love it. But most of the studios, that agreement, that unspoken agreement between the player and the designer, design is compromised at every corner for monetization in that space. And I just loved that the $60 game, they still had to prove the value was there to earn your $60. And they were forced on day one to have a package good enough to garner those sales. And I think that's like, free-to-play becomes the worst because everybody's like, well, what are you going to do? It's free.
Yeah.
Who cares that it launched broken and empty? It is free. You didn't pay anything for it. And it's like, well, I would have rather paid $60 and shown the stakeholders day one, if you screw this up too long, we stop buying your product.
Yeah. Like, I'd rather buy a reasonably priced but like worthwhile tool from a tool store than get some garbage $5 thing from Temu that breaks in 5 minutes, because then my time has just been wasted. It doesn't matter that it's free. My time is the cost. And and even when the $60 games did want to sell you more, they either had to make it completely low stakes, like pure cosmetic stuff, or really make it worth your while to then pay an additional cost on top of the buy-in, the $60 buy-in.
Yep. Which is why the idea of like iterative campaign design is a cool concept. Yep. And so clearly, we are reaching a new paradigm shift, and somebody's going to come up with the new concept. You remember when things shifted from the loot box era, and when that got too big, and then everything went just full free to play, and they changed the system. You know, speaking of Halo 5 and Warzone, for me, the breaking point is when they started selling the Mythic rec card packs, and you could essentially just buy packs and packs and packs with real world money of the best like Warzone cards. And the argument was, well, you can grind in game to earn those. Or if you had money, you could always make sure that in your Warzone games, you're dropping like the best Norn Fang, the gold cards, basically. And that's when I walked. Yeah. That's when I was like, you know, this is a compromise where I need to move on here. This is not for me.
Yeah. I want to add one thing, and then we can do rapid fire of a couple final comments here as we close out the show. But Total Biscuit, again, I promise after this week, I will stop talking about the man.
We don't need to stop talking. Dude was awesome.
He has a few really good videos about multiplayer only games, free to play games, like navigating the space. And obviously they have some degree of datedness because he's navigating the space as it was in 2015, 2017, a couple different periods of time. But I think the perspectives are still incredibly important, even in today's gaming landscape. And there was one video he had about multiplayer only games because there was a lot of drama as that started to become a concept. That was a brand new thing at the time. And like an example being like Rainbow Six Siege. And one of the things he points out is how interesting it is when people turn on these concepts, because he remembers when games came out and kept shoehorning multiplayer modes into them, and people complained about that because it felt out of place. And he used The Darkness 2 as an example, where it's like a single player game, but the developers felt so compelled to make it worth the money for the full package that they were adding a multiplayer option into it anyway, even though it didn't really fit, because they were so set on providing as much value as possible. And he's like, and for some reason, people complained about that. And now they're getting mad when they take out the unnecessary things and just focus on the one mode. And it's so fascinating to consider that we are now at the point where we're begging for a complete package. But there was one point in time where developers were trying to shove as much as they could into games to make them as like worth it as possible. And I hope we can get back to that in some way. But like I said, rapid fire, some final comments here that I thought were addressing. We've got Destiny Rachel, who said, great episode. Just want to add, I have seen the PlayStation Network have an editor's choice category fairly frequently. They've been experimenting more with stuff like that, I think. And that was,
that's awesome.
We had an episode talking about curation on the console spaces and how hard that is. There was also some news. PlayStation just removed like one of those asset flip developers with like 1,000 games from the PlayStation store. So that clears out a lot of that stuff. So
good.
Really cool stuff there. Nephilim O May O Cry, which I love the name. I'm a hardcore Devil May Cry fan, and I liked DMC despite all the hate. I played all the games that came before and thought it was a fresh take. I just wanted to highlight that because I love being vindicated about my love for DMC Devil May Cry, and it's a shame that that studio did not get to take on more games in that style.
Awesome. That dude at work says, love the section about demos. If all games had demos, I would probably buy more games because I would try them first and be less worried about buying slop and ending up regretting it.
Yes.
I feel very similarly, and I do want to remind people, most indies, a lot of indies now on Steam are doing demos. So just be sure to check. It's not great how it's always laid out in Steam, but it is worth a shot. Always, if you add something to the wish list, check if there's a demo.
Yes, it is a strong, strong, strong goal of mine to make more content around demos this year. I know I talked about it last year and couldn't really make it work, both covering stuff that comes up during Next Fest, but also I create a script that crawls through my Steam library and tells me what games I own that have demos. So I don't have to because it's hard when I already have games to know, basically if I don't have the demo in my library because I have the game, I just don't think about it in that context. And so I want to make demo roundups of games that I like. So I'm very excited to tie into that and make some content around it so that you have other things that you can check out.
Yes. And then Seth Mann's comment, 5324, kind of paste it in here, yeah. Funny, so I might need your help.
I can do this.
But he says, oh yeah, go for it.
Finished this episode yesterday after listening to the whole podcast plus party chat. Thank you. These past few weeks, and thanks to them, I started and just now 100%ed Astrobot.
Yes.
My second platinum trophy ever, which is awesome. I just want to say thank you for the podcast. You two put how I feel about gaming and life balance into words that leave little room for me to add on to. I've been on a journey these past few months to try to get away from the algorithms and social media. I've deleted all social media from my phone and try to limit my YouTube time there as well. Even watched Epos's video rescuing myself from digital hell where I was when I first was trying to figure out how I can better balance my life and time with tech. I will also say your conversations about gaming and doing things with intent has really changed my philosophy on how I interact with content, either it be with anime, movies, show, games, or creators on YouTube. I now do my best and do my own curation of my interests instead of just letting the algorithm choose for me all the time. Ever since then, I have felt a positive feeling towards my hobbies and projects and not feeling as much FOMO as before I started this. Once again, thank you too for another banger of an episode. I look forward to the next one and seeing what you have in store for 2026. Keep up the awesome work.
That's awesome to hear. Thank you. What a kind comment there.
Yes. There's a PS on there. Yes. Speaking of mobile gaming, I have a good buddy who mostly plays games on his phone, but he plays ports of old PC classics like KOTOR, Baldur's Gate, and stuff like that. He just recently finished playing through Planescape Torment. Heck yeah. Turn-based RPG games and such that have no upfront costs or have an upfront cost, but no in-app purchases and are optimized for mobile. He's super happy. He did try Destiny Rising and says it's decent for a real mobile game, but prefers the PC ports. I didn't even know those games had mobile ports. That's amazing.
KOTOR, I have a coworker who does play a lot of that stuff. And I think I heard KOTOR on the phone was actually an auto battler in a lot of ways. And so it's a really good, I've never played through KOTOR. I had it on Xbox and it's a game that is in such a legendary status with so many players, but I feel like every year that ticks by, it ages in a way where I'm like not gonna be as into it. But yeah, I can recognize and respect. I feel like an old Baldur's Gate or something on a phone, that makes so much sense in a little short burst. Yeah, you know?
I have a buddy that I do like that was in all of our D&D groups and stuff, and every time we got to a D&D session, like, he was grinding out some random like NES or SNES era like Final Fantasy game or something on an emulator on his phone, and I'm just like, so that's how you play all these games? And like, obviously that is a way to do it, but like, both because I don't work out of the house, so like I don't have a commute or whatever to capitalize on it on, but like, it's so hard for me, especially, we were talking earlier in the show about our favorite ways to play, like there are some games like KOTOR I feel like I'd want to play at the PC or at the TV. It's not something I'd want on my phone, but then I am the one posing this paradox of like, I want games that are fun on my phone and optimized for it, but I don't want to play them there. I want to play them somewhere else. So I got to figure out what it is I actually want here.
I will say, I liked in his comment, he added like ditching social media. I talked about it in the last DualCon, but I've like super mellowed out on the anti like digital devices thing. And I think the majority of that is just because the last holdout for me for social was Twitter, and dropped it in September. I love my phone right now. It is the coolest device for reading and learning, and it's all about the apps and the way you use it. And I'm in a much more chill space and less like I need to shout at everyone from the mountaintops like, attention economy is bad. I think that's like the initial discovery phase, and I feel like now it's this much nicer balance phase where the pendulum has swung back a little bit. And I just deleted a bunch of notes in here. Sorry. Control Z is a beautiful command in our show doc.
All your comments are gone.
All comments disappear. And I had no idea where I was going with that, other than I just appreciate hearing those perspectives from our listeners and this audience that, you know, it's about how you use the device. And that goes with any of the hobbies that we're doing here. Like, you could literally go back to the Stone Ages and disappear and get rid of everything and have this stoic lifestyle. And you'll learn things for sure, but I feel like there's a pathway where you can utilize tech and be a part of the current era without like 100% head in the sand. It's just a few modifications,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think so. I am at that weird point where like, I don't hate my phone anymore, but I don't have anything fun to do on it. So then I still have that instinct of like, okay, I check it more than I should, but then there's nothing to check. And so I haven't figured out what to do with that yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the success, though. Yeah. It just depends on the level of fun. Also, being nicer to yourself and recognizing, hey, it's okay. Like, not every second has to be optimized. Yes. You can dip your toe in the water of recharging. And I think it's just recognizing you're recharging in a different way. Like, for me, the fun of the phone is looking at a few different websites and reading articles about different news things. And I'm really trying hard to actually, like, not super trying hard, but just looking up stuff that has nothing to do with gaming. We get to talk about it here. We get to make content on it. And the more fun I'm having with it is because I'm stepping away further from it and reading less about it and being less involved in the constant communication and noise.
Yeah. And I agree. You don't min-max. Like, I hate all the stuff, even when I was in my big anti-smartphone thing. Like, the whole thing of, like, you can turn your doom scrolling into micro-learning. Like, no, your brain needs a break, not to load it more. That's the opposite of the answer. Like, yeah, it's not good to eat junk food all day every day, but sometimes it's nice to just eat a little junk food every once in a while, and that's okay.
It's the balance, right?
As with everything, the intentionality,
and your dopamine sensitivity topic we just talked about, you know, like, these apps overdo it to where you do feel tired and lack motivation. Like, an hour on TikTok or whatever, like scrolling shorts, you're just going to be blasted, continually blasted. But like, even YouTube, I'm having a lot of fun watching and learning stuff with, because I'm shifting my viewing habits. I'm intentionally not clicking on the sensationalized algorithm bait, and I'm searching more for content. Like, I've been down the Linus Tech Tips rabbit hole, watching a bunch of their videos lately on lunch breaks, because it's fun and they still have a really positive outlook and still make creative, happy videos. And somehow it works in the algorithm for them because they're really smart with how they package it. And then, I think I've told you before, I just keep plugging away 20 more minutes watching the Fellowship of the Ring behind the scenes content, you know, and I'm looking forward to getting to the Two Towers. I mean, there's like 6 hours of fun filmmaking stuff there and stories. And like, I didn't know Sean Bean like literally climbed the mountains. He refused after one like gnarly helicopter flight. He refused to take the helicopter to the filming locations. So he would literally get up at 2 or 3 in the morning dressed up as Boromir, and they would be flying out to the location with like Frodo and Aragorn and everybody. And they look down, there's a tiny dot, and it was Sean Bean climbing up these mountains to get to the location.
That's like, amazing.
Isn't that so freaking cool? I had no idea. So, I think that's it for this week's party chat, or this month's party chat, however many we do.
The start of the new year. Thank you so much for your support on the show. Again, patreon.com/dualcom if you're interested in more. We're not going to shill it a ton, but I do at least up front want to make sure everyone's aware that we are doing this. And I'm already super stoked for the next normal dualcom episode because we already have a stacked list of topics. So stay tuned on BBK's channel for that.
Yes, I do got to say, we got to look at mugs. I remember when we did Destiny the Show, my favorite thing ever is we made mugs, and mugs are just the best, you know? And so we'll have to iron out. We don't really have much iconography for this thing, but that would be really cool to explore.
Yes.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm over on BBK Dragoon. That's the YouTube channel there. You can check out the DualCom podcast and the Party Chat podcast on all the podcast players and all the platforms. We deeply appreciate you and your time, and I hope it is a great week for everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. We'll see you next time.
See you.